Good morning and welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovic and Leon Weigart. And Sam.
Yes, Leon.
Now, I know you're a student of a lot of things, but what the hell, where's our law? Where's the common sense in law? Two things.
Detentions.
Firstly, the guy that we've had on this program with the Sluggate affair.
Ian Cook.
Or poor old Ian Cook, I was going to call him.
Yeah, he is.
Because he's won the case and lost his knackers.
That's right.
And the umpire that, God, guilty of sin, but because it's not written the right way. Now, I don't know the bloke, and he might be a nice guy, but the law is an ass, really, isn't it? They say it's an ass. It's not. It's an ass.
Well, regardless of what it is, whatever side the railway lines or whether you had a private or public education, that's irrelevant. But the one thing that never changes, Leon, is a principle. Now, you talk about a matter of law. There's always a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. But one thing that is in black and white, what about these people who got released on detention because the High Court said, under no, they're pedophiles, they're thieves, they're cutlasses, they're murderers. But because they've done their time, they're now got to be released. No, and they can't be taken back to their country.
That's how you won, bug, is it?
There's several. But in answer to specifically that Ian Cook case, who we know personally, which is a member of that Sluggate, and it was proven both times that Sutton was complicit.
Yep. Well, he was wrong.
He was wrong.
So was the department.
In the interim, poor old Ian Cook and his family.
Done their lot.
Done their life, their personal savings, they've probably mortgaged the house, and whilst they've had a hollow victory, here they are. It is so wrong. It is, social injustice is just...
But how do you fix it,
Well, simple to fix. Fix the judicial system, fix everything up philosophically, start from the bottom. Start teaching us a bit of respect and dignity and pride and respect and all those wonderful things that Mum and Dad taught us.
But this is where dictatorships come from, because somebody, some real strong arm will take over and say, all that's nonsense, I'm going to change all that. And it'd be compelling to listen to him or her, because there's so many silly things that happen.
You make a valid point, but all these laws have all been constructed by, in the medieval times by some, some pom that's had a lot of time up his sleeve and, read the fine print. You ever read the back of an insurance policy?
Oh, how can you?
Well, how can you? Exactly. There lies my answer. Because it's always a lawyer's picnic. They create the rhetoric and to try to decipher the narrative is almost an impossibility. Until you get the claims, put a claim in, then you'll say, refer to 2.BC.
Page 48.
Page 48, and there it's in black and white, it tells you in the most convoluted manner that it's worthless. Now, I'm going to pose you a question before we get to our very, very special guest. Last week saw the end of another wonderful spring carnival. May I oppose you in the simple layman terms, because we're all truly great Aussies and we enjoy a few shekels of our choice, the volatile investment portfolio, as we more commonly allude to as a punt. Just briefly, in a couple of words, the spreadsheet. How did it end up in terms of black or red?
This surprises me coming from you, because I know that you had a shite time. I went to the Melbourne Cup.
Asked you a few words. Why don't you personalise it?
I had three bets for no result, but they were only little bets, so I got out of it free because I was very well looked after in the hospitality sense.
Oh, as we are.
And and I happen to know, now when you got a bloody second-hand shirt on.
Now, look, stop dropping subtle cryptics, all right? Everyone knows I had a poor pair of... poor time of things, but the other thing, has anyone been ringing you about me at all?
Yeah, am I down as a reference, am I?
You are.
Yeah. I'll look after you.
Can I have those last four digits of your credit card?
Our guest today, 328 games of footy with the Mighty Blues. Superstar in the game, John Nicholls. Well, no better ruckman.
Oh, no bigger name.
And thanks for getting him too, Sam. And we say good morning to you. John, thanks for joining us on our podcast.
Leon and Sam, not a problem, but after listening to that crap for the last 5 minutes.
I knew he'd be a backhander. That's all he does. The way he played the game, everyone thought, oh, Big John, what a love.
A few of your connotations, Sam, I agree with it. And if Leon wants a dictator to take over, there's one just retired from Victoria.
Well, he's not getting away scot-free, this one, I'm telling you.
Perhaps we can put those 72... blokes were released out in Mulgrave, isn't this
area? Ah, now there's a point.
Now, Nick, getting down to the footy and going right back to the grassroots, you're from Maryborough, and obviously...
I came from a place called Cotswold, 15 miles out of Maryborough.
Oh, that's right. The country people count those things. Yeah, okay, Cotswold. And your brother Don, of course, and... But did you, were you aware of Max Oppie before you got down to Carlton?
Probably not. I mean, to be honest with you, looking back in 1955, 56, there was no television in the country. I mean, most days you didn't get a paper. You listen to the ABC. God, hasn't that changed? Talking about things changing. But no, I think I saw one game before I came to Melbourne. When I can't even think who it was, but no, it was a long way away, and you lived a country life, and you did what you did up there. But coming down here, I didn't know much about 56. My brother Don started Carlton, so obviously I knew that year. But I'd heard the name Max Oppie and Jack Dyer and those boys, but they were before my time.
Now, Nick, I don't want to diminish your status or your profile or your stardom. But you weren't the first choice, actually. Donnie, your brother, who I might add in our condolences and commiserations to you, mate, because I know he just passed away this week along with your sister, so very sorry to hear all that, mate. But he was the first choice of Carlton, and apparently your old man said, unless you take both, you don't get any of us.
A lot of crap. anyone who knew my father wouldn't say that. Look, to be honest with you, he was a prodigy in the country, my late brother. He, at 15, he won the best and first in the local competition in Maribyrnong, playing against men. At 16, he played with the Maribyrnong seniors and won the Courier Trophy in the whole Ballarat League at 16.
Gee.
So he could play, right? And typically, in the unprofessional days of VFL, he had a couple of bad ankle injuries. One of his last years, and he went and played in Oakley for a year. But look, he was if he was playing nowadays, he was probably a 300-game player. Would have been, but he could play. Yeah, probably. Of course, Carlton. He was a first choice. But I was just a young fat kid, hadn't even developed this day. So, but as I proved, I was a quick learner.
Oh, Nick, there's no doubt about that. Now, tell me your early days at Carlton. Who coached and how was the club?
I had my greatest friend and mentor in my first year. That was Ken Hands.
Solvo.
And after 2 years, Carlton in those days was split with political arguments. Leon wouldn't know about that at Fitzroy too. But and I think Ken retired after 1 year. He shouldn't at 57, came back in 59 as a coach. And what I learned in his first year, one year with him, he was the greatest captain I've seen, and probably I was the next best after that. But in 59, we worked out a lot of things together particularly about ruck work and tactics and things, and he was a very good coach, but he was in the middle of political people arguing all the time at Carlton.
Tell me, the lean years, did you play finals up until, I know 68, 67 when Barassa arrived?
No, I played my first year, 1957, we finished fourth and played Hawthorne in the first semi-final that famous day when the Hailstones arrived at the MCG, 1957, 59... We got beaten in the preliminary final. I was best on the ground. 62, we drew with Geelong, and we were, I think, yesterday thrashed just in the grand final. But no, I had a bit of finals experience before Brass came over.
Tell me, that's political intrigue, beats me, because I thought KG Luke was running the whole show about that period.
Well, yes, but then he retired and went to be president of the VFL.
Oh, right, he didn't hold the two positions. No. So then
no, he was, okay. I mean, we had Horry Clover for 1 year. But KG left. He bought the land out at Waverley. Became president of the VFL.
That's right.
And we had a chapman number, Lou Holmes, come in as president. But in those days, under the constitution, there was 13 committeemen, or 12, and I think the board was split 6-4, 6 against. It was all to do with ones who didn't like Ken Hands and ones who liked Jim Francis and so on. And, there was no, the team and the board didn't work together.
Nick, I reckon there were two defining moments in the history of the Carlton Football Club, certainly in their contemporary years, historically. One was the advent of Ron Barassi at Carlton, when he arrived at Carlton. And secondly was the turmoil of the George Harris years and his departure. Just your recollection, firstly, when Barassi was appointed, and what inkling did you have, and what was the mood like at Carlton at the time?
Well, look, at the time, in 1964, 63, 64, we had bad years. I think in those days, 64, we finished the worst in our history. At that stage, it was 11th out of 12. And when Brass came, look, Brass... Was a good coach, but he wouldn't have had the success. He had a brilliant match committee in those days, and he had a brilliant basis of a team. Apart from me, you know, Sergio Silvani and a lot of these guys basically had been on the way up. And in the first year or two, we recruited Gary Crane and Brian Quirk, Alex Cisalenko, Sid Jackson. We got a clearance for him, and so on. Wes Lofts was coming through. We had the nucleus of a good side. Now Brass was the right coach at the time to mould everyone into, you know, a tough, disciplined side. But then, as we got through 67, getting close, 68 we won it, but 69 we probably could have, apart from injuries. But and then, as Brass does in his time, he coached for 7 years, and after 6 years, the players were sick of him. We didn't make the finals in 71. But look, he brought over a lot of ideas from Norm Smith, plus his own, but without a brilliant match committee and without a brilliant backup players, as you know, it doesn't matter what team you're coaching. You know, when he went from there to North, where they recruited a magnificent lot of guys out of the 10-year rule, he moulded them into a brilliant side, as you know. But, you know, with Sydney and with Melbourne, if you haven't got the players there, it doesn't matter who the coach is, it's a hard job. But when Brass came to Carlton, he was... and when George Harris came into power in 1965, the same thing. I mean, he brought in a whole new committee. But George was a dictator. And as some dictators do, after a while, they shoot themselves in the foot. And George was a brilliant guy doing that, but as he started making dumb decisions, without going into all of them, he made a lot of dumb decisions, and then, you know, his time had run out. So it happens to all those things. It's hard to keep going and going and going.
We split the club up, and of course, you know, we saw the departure of Jezalenko then. Alex decided to team up with George.
Well, Jezza was loyal and naive at the time, the fact that he supported George. You know, he couldn't see that George was the wrong guy at that time. He had to move on. And Jezza supported him because he was loyal to him. But Jezza should never have gone to St Kilda. He should have stayed. You know, it was just pure loyalty to George.
Where did Percy Bentley fit into all this?
Oh, well, he was going back... he was in the old school, I mean, before my time, but I think he coached for 15 years in a row. I think he came out from Richmond in, I don't know, 1945 or something.
Yeah, well, I thought he was chairman of selectors as well.
He had, well, he coached through the 1945-47 premierships. But there again, you know, 1947, we didn't win one for 21 years in 68. And Peirce, his last few years, probably, I'm not saying he made mistakes or his time had run out, but he was an old stalwart, and he was chairman of the match committee when I started. I mean, we had Peirce Bentley, Mick Crisp, and, you know, we had old players. In those days, you see, the difference is nowadays, all the clubs, particularly Carlton, all the planning and recruiting and selection is done by the coaches. In my day, a lot of the guys on our match committee, like Peirce Bentley and Ken Hands and Mick Crisp and these sort of guys, Bert Deacon, they'd had a lot of experience and final experience, and they sort of knew how to do things in safe hands. Sometimes, you know, and say all clubs now, the teams, the planning of who they want and who they want to drop and how they do things, it's done by the coaches. And a lot of these coaches that come along have got no really background in how to pick teams and how to plan and how to do different tactics and things. They learn as they go. And when Brass came, a lot of the older coaches, you probably go back to Yabby Jeans, you know, he had a good backup team at Hawthorn. You know, a lot of the older clubs may be old-fashioned, but the older guys that stayed around, they knew about playing in finals and how to prepare, and, you know, where nowadays the coaches do everything.
Now, Nick, amid that turmoil, we saw Percy Jones appointed coach for a brief period of time.
He was for 1 year. I'm trying to think now back. When I finished, I think Thorogood took over. I think
in 78,
did it for a while, and Jonesy 1 year. But yeah. That was after, Jezza was, I mean, I thought I'd be the last captain coach ever to win a flag in 72.
Yeah, he did in 79.
But Jezza won one again in 79 as captain and coach.
Now let's go back to that 72, that famous final victory.
It's been talked to death. It's been talked to death, Sam.
I know. Well, okay. Well, it's a famous one at 28 goals, 20, you kick six in the forward pocket. You put Jones in the ruck. You reinvented the, you moved the magnets on the Titanic, and the rest is history. But that was a masterful coaching deed. I don't know who conjured it up. Was it you?
I mean, there was a book come out recently, written by someone that interviewed six blokes. But it was my idea. My good mates and vice captains were Jezza and Robert Walls, and they're the only ones I told about it 2 weeks in advance. No one else.
Well,
didn't tell the mess committee because I couldn't trust them. They get into Thursday nights. They get in and have their scotches and having a drink, and then they ring up telling all their mates what's happening.
And the press as well. What about the?
So I didn't tell anyone apart from the ones I trusted.
Fair enough, and I totally concur with you.
And the mess committee and the committee was shitting on me.
Right, now I'm going to ask you this question, and I'm going to think this very closely. I'm on Delta alert here with you. Now, because I always remember the way you played too. Everyone thought, oh, good clean Nick. No one ever saw the short jabs from 6 inches. He was the most venomous bloke. Ron Barassi always said about Nick, and I said it the other night. People often ask you who's the greatest and who's the best player. They'll always name guys like Hart or Jezalenko, people of enormous skill. But Barassi always classified them. He said the most valuable player, the person that's got the most influence and can direct the course of the game. Without doubt, he said, by 100 yards, is John Nicholls. Now, this artistry of rucking. Now, you're only a short... Six,
6'2".
You weren't a big man. You're a huge man.
Be careful nowadays what that means, mate. You might be.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, dispense with the vernacular.
I've got to think now, Sam. I've got to think now, how would I describe you?
Rather corpulent.
No, look, listen.
What?
Talking about ruck work, which... very few people. I look at it this way: you get a big, tall bloke come into a team, and it might be a brilliant centre forward, a full forward, or centre back, and none of them ever want to play in the ruck. In my day, it was too bloody hard and too tough in the ruck. You always get stops, scraped down your legs, and all sorts of
things.
But the point was, when they started changing rules, back in my day, the best umpire was Alan Nash. There hasn't been an umpire, I don't care, bar anyone, how many dozens we've got. There's no real... The umpires don't understand the art of ruck work. You get the ridiculous things nowadays where a centre bounces with this centre line around it, where all of a sudden the umpire will give a free kick against the other ruckman for shepherding or jumping in a bit different at centre bounce. They've got no idea. I mean... I'd like them to be a ruckman for a while to work out how you jump and how what you do with your knees and legs and things. I mean, no one understands ruck work, and this is what, since they brought that white line in, I mean, I hate talking old school. I mean, when I started, I listened to Jack Dyer and Lee Richards and Bruce Andrew on those shows, and I said to myself, when I get old, I'm never going to say, oh, look, it's not what it used to be. Of course it's not. Things change. But as far as ruck work goes, centre bounces, in particular with the line there, that only came in because of blokes wrestling. Gary Dempsey and Peter... I can't think... The North Melbourne... Might have been the Collingwood bloke, but they wrestled at centre bounces, didn't jump. So, and then they started bringing it because of all the banging knees together... doing your ACLs and things at centre bounces.
Well, it's lost a lot of its...
You look at Polly Farmer, me, Len Thompson, John Schultz, I can go on and on. Not one of us hurt our knees at centre bounces. Not once. Particularly some of Madden, the best. You know, we all basically, Polly, Simon and I, we came in from an angle, side on. So they bring that rule in, and you can look at all the photos over the years of Polly Farmer and I and Simon Madden at Boundary Throw-ins. We never wrestled. We jumped.
Yep.
So this is the things where then umpires are forced to make a decision about who's with you blocking, using your arms, getting your body in front of the other guy. It's a simple thing, and yet all of a sudden the umpiring... doesn't understand it, so they start paying free kicks, and most of them are not right.
Now, talking about
Sam, what was your question?
Well, no, you've answered it. You've answered it. Look, and I might finish on that, Nick, by saying that the artistry of ruck work or the art of ruck work is diminished as a consequence because perhaps they don't know how to adjudicate upon it. And now they just say, stand, you've got to nominate someone to go into the ruck. It is ridiculous. Might as well just have a rolling game of, British Bulldog. Ruck work's no longer the art form that it was in its halcyon days.
Nick, I wanted to get on to the best and fairest. Now, Sam was talking about Ron Barassi's rap for you being the most valuable. But you won 5... Now, this is a trophy, right?
I won 5. I was
Robert Reynolds.
I runner-up 4 times and third twice.
Yeah. Now, that was for the Robert Reynolds trophy, which most people, well, I certainly never heard of Robert Reynolds, but...
It was a
Coburg
councillor.
Oh, right. Well, stupid me, not knowing that. And
Belabor too, wasn't it, Coburg?
And now they name it the John Nicholls trophy, which is terrific. But you won 5 of them.
I'm very honoured. When Ian Collins was actually in prison for a while, the board named it after me, which a lot of clubs are doing now. You go around to the Bob Skilton medal and the Kevin Murray medal, and which they should. A lot of clubs like that are doing it. And I think it was in 2003 or 2004 it was named after me. And it's one of the greatest honours I've got at the club. It's a wonderful... I enjoy it, but I had, I think, 5, 4 and 2, so...
Well, Mr. Consistency, and over 328 games, not too many bad ones, eh? The Simpson Medal must have been a big thrill too, to be the best player in those carnivals. It's a big honour. I think Alan Aylett won one of those too.
Did
he?
Well, the Simpson Medal's only on one day.
Oh, Western Australia.
Yeah, it was in a... that's only in one game, the Tassie Medal. But, no, sorry, the Simpson Medal. The medal in carnivals, well, anyone could win those, because I think in 1969 we won the carnival in Adelaide, and Sam was there. And played that side. Sam Newman did too. But
remember that, Nick? Remember the first ruck?
Two best on the grounds and another good game, and I got two votes, and it was won by Peter Eakins and the guy that went to Melbourne, Malloy, was it?
Yeah, Malloy. Remember that game we played against South Australia? I'll never forget it. The first ruck for Victoria was Nichols, Kekovich, I think it was Bartlett or Skilton. And remember who the Adelaide first ruck was?
Big tall bloke.
Bill Wedding, remember him?
Bill Wedding,
Robram and Eustace.
Yep.
Yeah. And the collective weight of outweighed them by about 40 kilograms, I think. And I remember Bill Wedding was a big, tall, skinny bug, about 6'7" or 6'8". And they got him around Nick. And Nick went up in the first ruck. He just pointed out those steely eyes of his. He just said, "Get over here, you." That's why he used to talk to me. Just get over there. I said, "Who are you talking to?" And I didn't say that. I talked under my breath because I thought I was a superstar at North, but Nick caught. Big Nick, no one ever back-chatted there. So just get over there. So the opening bounce, he went up and up in the ruck, this Bill Wedding. Oh, he heard every rib just crack. That was the end of Bill Wedding. He just palmed the ball down and moved on. And that was the end of the ball game. That was Big Nick, he just moved on. Oh, yeah, Bill Wedding, that was his name, Nick. I'll never forget his name because I remember the first opening bounce, crash. Oh, Bill Wedding must have thought,
I don't remember that, Sam, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, how about, you mentioned Robbie Walls. He went on to coach the club, of course. David Parkin was another long-term coach. How do you rate the coaches over the years, John?
Oh, look, I can't really. To be honest with you, Sam would be the same. They say, apart from himself, who's the best player at North Melbourne? Who's the best player you've seen? Who's the best ruckman? I can't separate any of those type of things. In ruck work, obviously, I say Polly Farman, but in the last 20, 30 years or more, Simon Madden was the best ruckman, and has been around for a long time. He copied us. It was a style. Sam Newman was a great ruckman. But as far as coaching goes, look, it depends on the year and what you've got to... what happens in your injuries and this sort of thing. And I can't really compare them because they're different. I know Parko, well, I had 7 years with Brass, and I said he was good, but he wore probably, I guess I was a bit lucky because I think I was the only one on the only player on the list that wasn't frightened of him. I think he was frightened of me, so I was lucky. Nothing happened to me with Brass, but a lot of others, he didn't treat them all that well, you know, he frightened them. But you can't compare.
Nick, what about the contemporary game? Yeah, I know you still go to the footy. What do you make of it now when you look at the hurly-burly of your era? And I know you didn't ever want to be a dinosaur because you look forward. But are you amazed at some of the... some of the rules and the way the game has progressed?
I've been the most loyal VFL, AFL person ever. But the rule changes. I hate the fact we've got a major sporting game in the world, and you name me one of those sporting game that changes rules every year. I mean, whether you look at whatever, even soccer or rugby, they only ever change rules, but... you look at the old the tennis and soccer and golf. There's rules there, so you either change the rules. You don't adapt them every year. And you don't change them from week to week, which happens. I know they want to get a fast-flowing game. They don't want all these ball-ups and things, but, you know, one of the worst things to me is standing on the mark.
Stand.
But no, but the worst thing is, I believe, is when you've got to stand on the boundary line.
Yes, agreed. Right? Agreed.
I mean, if you should be allowed to come in,
yeah, of course,
4 or 5 yards or whatever, so they kick over you. Well, but when you stand on the boundary line and they run 10 yards inside you, I mean, you've got no hope.
What about the fullbacks now can kick 100 goals anyway? They can run out the centre-half back virtually. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know, but even with all of that, I mean, the goal kickers, like our couple of guys, I mean, I think 60 or 70 goals still wins it.
Yeah. What but about now, this?
I mean, it's all right. But once again, who's making the changes every year? What are they going to do again next year?
Yep. Good point.
I just leave it. Leave it alone.
Talking about next year, John, Carlton showed a bit of form this year and looked like being anything for a while, or they were hopeless for a while, then they looked like being anything and they just dropped away a bit. How do you see them for next year?
Well, look, I think with the list we've got, as long as they stay fit, and I think Williams will probably play, Zach Williams will probably be available to play, but look, I think they were learning as they went, and Vossi has done a good job. He was an unbelievable, tough, great player, you know, 3 flags and that with Brisbane, but they also had to learn about each other. But as the year went on, I think our tactics got better. We're going to learn basically about getting our forward line to work with two big blokes, Charlie and Harry, but... our racks are reasonable. Our centre squad of players, Cripps and Kennedy and all those. I mean, one of the problems with our centre line of people, they're tough and they get the ball and they tackle well. But apart from Sarah, our blokes don't kick well. Cripp was a mate of mine. I love him. I've told him to his face lots of times about your handballing and your kicking's got to improve. So when you get some other sides where their kicking is smooth and more accurate, you know, but so when we get the ball out of the centre sometimes, it's ball, they're all real goers. But under pressure, they're not kicking well. So things like that, they can improve. We can improve a lot in that area.
Well, good luck to him. And good luck to you too, John. And been a great pleasure having you on our little program here and Sport and Life. And I know you see Sam a bit and he'll bring along a couple of bottles of Mitchell and wine for you.
I don't think he drinks now, Nick. Do you have a drink now, Nick?
Is the Pope a Catholic?
Well, Mitchell and Wine's our great sponsor. We always offer a couple of nice bottles of... Shiraz or white, whatever you so desire, mate.
Now, Leon, am I going to catch up with you in a couple of weeks' time for our life members' function?
I've got that. That's the one at William Angus.
Yep.
I'm looking at that now. Yes, I hope so.
All right.
You do a great job. John's a long-term member of the AFL Life members, yep, and one of the ones that hold it all together.
The glue.
They do a good job too. And Tuddy's the president, so it's a good group.
You're a superstar, Nick.
Look forward to catching up with you, blokes.
Good on you, pal. John Nicholls joining us there on Sport and Life.